You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off. All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles, and I'm sitting here with an Iowa boy, Drew Harney, Iowa. Boy, Drew Harney. I said it twice, and I just told you don't repeat yourself. Drew, how you doing, man?
Doing good, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I just found out that we live less than 20 miles apart.
Yeah, small world, huh?
Small world. That's crazy. What do you do for a living, my friend?
I work in healthcare, healthcare administration here for one of the major hospitals here in the state. So kind of do a lot of different things in my job, but kind of more on the administrative side of healthcare. So
gotcha. Paperwork, yeah. Insurance, that kind of stuff.
What's that?
Paperwork and insurance, that kind of stuff.
Paperwork. Yeah, plenty of that, but mostly like kind of managing operations for outpatient clinics, kind of all the back end things, support for our providers, all of that good stuff. So
yeah.
Kind of work with all of our clinic leaders and hopefully make things kind of go around in a nice circle, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel you. But you don't work with insurance at all?
No.
Like insurance companies?
I don't think you could pay me enough to do that.
Okay, so. Good. Because I was just going to follow that up by saying, fuck insurance companies.
Yeah.
With all due respect, you know, with all due respect.
Yeah. My wife actually used to do that quite a bit and do all the prior authorization stuff. And I could not do that. I'm not built that way. And there's too many hoops to jump through. It's always a big pain, but we definitely hear it from patients and stuff like that. And it's a tough world to navigate.
Yeah. I'll say this, man. I was just blown away of how much everything obviously in this world costs, right? And with three kids and two adults, one sec. Sorry about that. Had to shut off my air conditioner. You said you had your heater on. I was shut off my air conditioner. In this world we live in with three kids and two adults in the family and the amount of insurance coming out of our family's pocket every single month, then you have this deductible to meet that is extremely high. I'm like, what the hell are we even paying for? Right. Obviously, if there was a major accident and there was a major surgery that needed to happen, yes, that's awesome. But geez, I'm just like, what's going on?
I know, you get hit on both sides of it.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to pay all this upfront costs. And then after something actually happens, you got to pay more.
Yeah. So. Don't they know that we're just trying to shoot deer? That's it, man.
I know.
That's it. That's all I want to do is I want to get out. You're taking that away from me, some of that away from me. So, I got to tell you a quick story here. All right. And I want, do you have any kids?
Yeah, I got two. I got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, two boys.
Two boys. So maybe this is a path that you're heading down. Do you coach any of them?
Yeah, sort of. So we were just kind of like starting the whole youth sports thing, which I'm already starting to see this is going to eat into a lot of my own free time. But I didn't do it this last year, but the year before I coached T-ball, and that was less coaching and more like herding sheep.
Yep.
But yeah, I imagine eventually I'll start doing that stuff once my boys get a little bit older and organized sports and all of that. But we're definitely like, we're just getting into that mode right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So last night I coach a red zone flag football team, 7-on-7. Mm-hmm. It's a passing league. So there's certain rules, like you can't, in certain areas of the field, you can't run. You have to have a, you have to have a pass play. And it's just a lot of routes and passing and things like that. Well, my team, and I started my son at quarterback. He's one of four quarterbacks, and it was his turn to start the game. And he threw three interceptions, and two of them were pick sixes. Okay.
Nice.
And so, first 10 minutes of the game, our team is down by three touchdowns. Okay. 21-0, first 10 minutes of the game. First 10 minutes of the half, you know.
Do you have to bench your own kid?
Well, I didn't bench. I don't bench kids unless they have an attitude problem. And so what we do is the other quarterback, we rotate in possession wise, right? So my son threw a pick, and then the other kid came in. I believe he threw a pick or, you know, four and out. My son came in, he threw another pick. The other kid came in, he threw a pick, and we just did not move the ball at all. Meanwhile, these guys, at halftime, it's 38-0.
Okay? Oh, no.
Yep. 25-minute halves. And the game's over, right? You just know it. As an adult, you know the game's over, but I'm trying to be the optimist here, and I'm just like hyping up the kids. I'm like, hey, if you don't believe that we can't come back and do this, right? If you can't believe we can't come back and do this, man, go sit on the bench. I want guys who want to believe. And then we got kids who are just like, coach, dude, like they're being real. They're being real with me. They're like, coach, we're down 38-0. We haven't even gotten a first down yet. How are we going to come back and beat these guys? I'm like, by believing in yourself, dude, by believing. So the final score, 67-8. We scored on the last drive of the game. We didn't give up. We got it done. But I haven't taken an L like that in a long time. Like, I'm talking business wise. I'm comparing this to my whole life, right? That's one of the biggest L's I've taken in a long, and I'm still like debating on if I want to send a letter of resignation to the parents today. You know what
Are you one of those guys? I don't know. I'm kind of like this. Like, you get ultra competitive in just about everything you do. It doesn't really matter what it is. So yes. If you lose, you're just heated.
Yeah. And I talk about this on an episode 1000 that we launched recently about, like, I don't let my kids win very easily. You know, they got to earn a victory over me. And, you know, maybe my youngest kid, you know, for playing cards, I'll maybe beat him three times in a row. And then maybe I'll throw the wrong card down and then he'll beat me for the fourth time or something like that. But like, I even in my fantasy football league, I am a shit talker. Like, you know, obviously that's for fun, but I'm into it. If I'm going to take time to do it, I want to do it right. I coach two football teams. I put the best kids in, like, I have to rotate at this age, right? This isn't like a make or break varsity football team. So yeah. I want to make sure everybody gets an opportunity to make a play, and I rotate in, especially with my younger son. But yes, I am competitive and it does suck to lose. Right. And this is what I tell my kids this. I go, the effort, everybody here likes to win. The effort that you put in to this game will determine whether or not you win or lose. And sometimes the effort isn't good enough and you're still going to lose, but you can never give up. Right. So I try to preach that. And then, you know, when you're dealing with second and fifth graders, they just don't give a shit. Some of them are only there for the snacks afterwards.
Yeah, I know. My oldest right now, I can already see it in him. He's got like that ultra competitive gene, and to the point where like he will actively like try to like cheat and like even playing cards, like he'll like stack the deck so he gets like the right cards dealt to him in the middle of a game. I'm just like, dude,
how did that happen?
I know. I'm going to get a hefty dose of karma with him as he gets older, for sure. Yeah. So,
because of the life that you've already lived?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh,
okay. So you were a cheater playing cards when you were younger.
Oh, yeah. 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 And just an overall knucklehead. So.
That's right. That's right.
Well, hey, we're here for a BS session on deer, and I can't wait to get into it. But before we get into that, I got to send a huge shout out to all of the partners here at the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. If you're looking, in my opinion, for one of the best broadheads on the market, you got to go check out Wasp Archery at wasparchery.com. They have a lineup of mechanical and fixed blade heads. I'm a huge fan of the three blade jackhammer and the Boss four blade fixed blade. Those are my two favorite. Both of those heads are manufactured in the United States of America, which is even better yet. Great material, great company, great people. Wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20. Next on the list, Vortex Optics. I want to send a huge shout out to Vortex Optics. My son this past weekend shot his first deer with a gun, and I bought a package deal. I bought a Savage 350 Legend with a package Vortex Crossfire already assembled to it. And, so I went to the shooting range. And the ease of use on this Vortex Crossfire to get it set up, the clarity of the glass, at a very affordable price point for that specific scope, man, I'm telling you, it doesn't get any better than that. And it was easy for my son to use the scope. And just like all of their products, especially their new Ranger HD3000 range finding binoculars that they have. So go to vortexoptics.com, check out their entire lineup of optics that they have, and read into their VIP warranty. Buying a pair of optics from Vortex is a no-brainer. Vortexoptics.com. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. Dude, Drew, this morning, 4 a.m., first picture. I'm just going to show it to you. I'm going to show it to you here real quick. And for those of you who are listening, tough shit, right? Let me see. I think I downloaded it. This is the first deer that I am going to consider a stud. I don't know if, can you see that?
Yeah, that's a stud for sure.
Yeah. That's a stud whitetail that is on, and I was worried, where are these deer at? And that deer is coming in to a mock scrape, right? From Code Blue Sense. So, I'm going to say this. This has no reflection on the company, but I think it has a reflection of the acorns. It has a reflection of where these deer crops are starting to come out. You've seen it in the area. Crops are starting to come out. And now there's that September shift, but now we have this crop rotation shift where deer are getting pushed out of, fingers of timber that run into cornfield. They're going to be migrating into different locations. And I put a mock scrape in some of these areas. They've been dead lately, but past 5 days, they have been lit up. They've been lit up, and I am excited about that because bucks like this are starting to show back up on my property. Go visit codebluesense.com and check out the mock scrape kits. Check out the real and synthetic deer urines. Check out the scent elimination products that they offer and enter the discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list, Reveal trail cameras. The picture I just showed you was from a Reveal trail camera, and very easy to use. You scan a QR code and you instantly have a cell camera that works. That's connected to your phone, to your app. And dude, just like minutes. It takes minutes to set up a cellular camera these days. Back in the day, I can remember having to go to the cell phone store and get a SIM card and then enter in a 55,000 digit code in order to get that son of a bitch to work, and it would never work, and I'd be upset. But now that the technology has gotten way better, go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new Ultra trail camera from Reveal. It's a badass camera. Last but not least, see this shirt I'm wearing? Maybe it's cool to you, maybe it's not cool to you, but I made this shirt and I'm happy with it. Go to fullsneakgear.com, buy a t-shirt from me, buy a blaze orange hat for gun season, buy a green stocking cap for the colder temperatures that are sure to come, or just a badass t-shirt. fullsneakgear.com. Drew, Iowa boy.
Yep.
All right. I want to start off in a weird spot with this conversation.
All right.
All right. Obviously, we live in what some would call the greatest whitetail state in the country. All right.
Pretty fortunate.
Pretty fortunate to be here, right? In certain. But is the, in your opinion, is the entire state of Iowa good, or is it just portions of the state that are good?
I think it's portions, and it depends on what kind of property you're hunting, for sure.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess my own personal opinion, like, I don't know. I'm not like this expert hunter or anything like that, but like, I think I've shot a couple of nice deer, but I'm not shooting or seeing 200 inch deer every year that I go out. I've never actually even seen a 200 inch deer before. So like, I'm the kind of guy, you know, 130 walks by and I'm shaking and I'm all tore up. So,
yep.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're littered all over the state, but, there's definitely portions of the state that are better than others for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I've mostly just hunted the southeastern part, and I usually try to stay within like an hour of where I live, which kind of in this Johnson County area. So, I hunt,
which is impossible to find permission almost these days.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah. Like, the only private piece that I have access to is through a family member. Mm-hmm. My uncle owns a small piece of property kind of between the Iowa City area and Solon, so not too far from here. But and it's not even really like heavily timbered, but it's kind of like one of those properties that actually sets up really well, kind of more as like a pass-through property. There's good stuff adjacent to it, but the property itself doesn't have a ton of timber. It's mostly just crop, but it has some good funnels, and that's kind of why I hunt it mostly during November, because that's usually when I see most of the activity, and usually ends up being better on corn years, I've noticed, than bean years.
Yep.
But I don't know. Sometimes I kind of see all the photos on social media and stuff like that, and I'm like, where are all these deer at?
Yeah.
But,
well, you know where they're at. Well, I mean, let's be real. We know where these deer are coming from, and they're coming from southern Iowa, south of Des Moines, on heavily managed farms and or entire neighborhoods of farms on thousands and thousands of acres of managed manicured property. And I'm not saying that's the case on all of it, every deer that comes out of Iowa, because there are big deer and we do have a really well-managed state as far as rules and regulations are concerned. But still, that top tier deer is coming from private ground on heavily managed farms and neighborhoods. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say, kind of as a generality for sure. Yeah. Like, there's definitely like some big deer on public land throughout Iowa where you don't really have a ton of, but like, I've seen some nice ones on public land because I try to hunt some public here and there. But a lot harder to find, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And you got to be in the right spot at the right time. If you can get access to one of those south central Iowa farms, or if you figure out how to do that.
Well, I'm going to get access first and then I'll tell you. Okay. And if it's big enough, maybe we can hunt it together.
Yeah.
But you know, I gotta watch out for my own first. Right.
Yeah.
Would you say that as far as the state of Iowa is concerned, the vibe that you get on social media and the vibe of everybody else wanting to come here and saying it's the best state, does what they're saying and what the talking heads are saying match up with the reality of the state?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's kind of hard for me to answer too, because all I really know is hunting Iowa. I haven't really gone out of state before to hunt, even though that's something I want to do. I would love to start taking some trips out west to hunt. That's like something that's kind of on my bucket list to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But, and even just do like some whitetail hunts, like in like neighboring states, would be a lot of fun. But I don't know. That's kind of hard to answer. I would just say like, it's probably more a result of where you're hunting in the state. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely portions of the state that probably align with a lot of other surrounding states that are more similar to how, you know, what I guess the ordinary whitetail hunters used to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess my own personal experience is it's pretty good, but again, all I've ever known is Iowa. So
yeah,
I'm sure if I went and hunted in like Michigan, I'd probably be like, where are all the deer at?
Yeah, right.
So
how much access, how long have you been a hunter?
Bow hunter. So I found bow hunting pretty late in life. I grew up like hunting, shotgun and like pheasants, things like that with my dad. He's kind of the one that kind of got me into it. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I would say most like my first love though was actually like fishing. Like just, I used to run around with my friends all the time. We just try to find like the next honey hole.
Yeah.
And just get off work, even through college, like get off work. Me and my buddy Ben would just head to the nearest pond or lake and try to find, you know, and just start fishing until sundown. But I didn't really get into bow hunting until 8 years ago. So okay. I haven't really been hunting for too long.
Yeah.
But I also have like a personality where when I get into something, I get really obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just go down at like every rabbit hole. So like as soon as I got into it, I immediately got obsessed with like building arrows and getting into all the nitty gritty with, you know, different arrow weights and all of that stuff. And
yeah,
I kind of got into saddle hunting like right when it first came out too. So like, I feel like I caught like the right when that started kind of really kind of blowing up. So yeah, that's really kind of all I've ever done. I think my first year I hunted with like a big summit climber and that was miserable. And then, ever since then I've been hunting with a saddle too. So
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, not too long.
Okay. So over the course of you from your childhood to, you know, starting, even though it was just shotgun season to now, have you lost farms because of, you know, buying and selling of a property? Have you like found it easy to get access or more difficult to get access to hunting properties here in this state?
It's definitely like more difficult. Like I haven't really lost too many properties because most of the properties I've hunted have been within the family.
Yeah.
But like gaining access and even like I was telling you about the property that I currently hunt right now, like I would love to hunt the surrounding properties because yeah, like you look at those on a map and they just look like they look awesome. You're like, yeah, I really want to just dive into those and like go figure out where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've knocked on doors. I've gone so far as to send like handwritten letters. I've done kind of a bunch of different things and I've never really had a lot of success in this area.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it's usually like the, so, oh, my son or my nephew or my so-and-so that's related hunts this and we don't want to have people on the property or we had a bad experience at one point and so now we don't let folks hunt. And that's too bad because, and I think that's, I've heard that a couple of times now with folks that have screwed it up and then all of a sudden that now they've screwed it up for a lot of other people down the line.
Yeah. You know, 100%. I've been part of that. I was on a farm. I believe this happened a couple of times, but I was on a farm several years ago and there was, I was sharing this farm with other hunters. And there was one rule, and the rule was, when my field is wet, do not drive on the field. The guy did not want ruts on in his fields, in his pastures. And what did someone do? A couple years into me hunting this property, someone did that. He went out there. He saw that there was ruts in his field. He kicked everybody out of it. No more hunting.
How long have you been hunting that farm?
I'd been hunting it at the time for 3 years, I believe. And the guy who did it, he'd been hunting the farm for like 12 years.
Oh.
Yep. And so it was during the shot. I was bow hunting it. This guy was during the shotgun season. It must have been wet. I think his crew went down there and shot a couple deer. Instead of getting a four-wheeler or something to take it out, they tried to take their trucks down. And that was it. Another time, and I was hunting a farm. And I was, I don't even know if I had a full year into this farm yet when this went down, but there was a snowmobile accident on the farm. and these guys were trespassing. They were on this lady's farm. They were trespassing, and they hit a fence, and it killed a guy. And the family, in order to get any type of restitution, or I don't know if maybe the guy didn't die. But he got hurt real bad. This would have been like almost 20 years ago. And the guy was like, the insurance company told us, in order for us, you have to sue the landowner, right? So this guy had to sue the landowner, and the landowner was like, okay, nobody is on my farm. This 300-acre farm, beautiful farm. Snowmobile comes in, gets hurt, kicks everybody off the property.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. Yep. And so, and I got to tell you one more story. I moved to this area, right? Mm-hmm. And the first weekend, on a Saturday and on a Sunday, the first weekend I moved up here, I knocked on 22 doors in the course of 2 days. And I got told no 22 times. That's cool. 23rd time I got access to a farm, but it might have as well have been public. You know what I mean? As far as
everybody had access to, or everybody got told,
yep. Everybody had access to it. So, in these big city centers, you know, like especially in a state like Pennsylvania, where you have Philadelphia on one side and you got Pittsburgh on the other, and I'm guessing an hour and a half, 2 hours away from those city centers, and like Chicago or whatever, it's a pay to play game. And the chances of getting access on a farm just by knocking on the doors is damn near impossible.
Well, I didn't think some of that's making it into Iowa now, because I think people were figuring out how much money they can make leasing their property and stuff like that, mm-hmm. too. And you see how much people were paying for leases, and mm-hmm. just like, I don't have that kind of money. So,
exactly. And that's happening. Like, I feel like in the 90s, Pike County, Illinois was that county that everybody, dude, I got a farm in Pike County. I hunt in Pike County, Pike County. It's the big buck capital of the world at one point. And then it got whored out through leasing, through outfitting. And all the locals were like, I talked to a guy there. He's like, dude, I used to hunt there with my family. And now upon the transactions between parents to children, they know how much money that can be made through leasing and outfitting, that they lease their farms or they sell their farms. And then, you know, next thing you know, there's this huge displacement of hunters because other people are coming into it. Yeah. And so, dude, I've lost farms because there's something about Iowa where the generation that farmed it and worked the land had this connection with it, and they wanted others to have the connection to their land.
Yeah.
And then the kids who they went off to college, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing because it happens. The kids come back to the land and they never worked it. They have different jobs, and so they don't have the connection. So to them, it's a dollar. And to the parents, it was a livelihood.
Yeah.
And so the connection is not there. And so they're like, holy shit, I can get $1 million for this? Fuck yeah, I'm gonna sell this ground. And there's because they're not hunters or farmers.
Yeah, especially if it's in this like southeastern area of the state where everything's so expensive. I mean, I think we live in like the most expensive county in the state. I don't know, or one of.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I kind of have this dream, right, of being able to purchase my own hunting property, put that into some sort of like LLC, protect it, hand it down to my kids someday. I want that to kind of be my legacy. And I've been saving for that for years. And it's like every year I feel like I'm making some progress. And then I kind of take like a glance and see kind of what the size, because I'm probably not going to be able to afford this giant property, right? I just wanted to get, if I could get like 20 to 40 acres around here and be like, I'd be stoked.
Yeah.
But even then it's like the prices just keep going up. And
20 acres is $500,000.
What's that? Right?
20 acres around here is $500,000, because they're not even marketing it as a farm. They're marketing it as a building lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so 20 acres is, it's not like where I'm from. 20 acres is probably, they'd sell it for 10 grand an acre and maybe you'd get $200,000 out of it. But yeah, around here, it's all about development now. It's all about building lots, yeah, and things like that.
Yeah, I've pretty much just accepted the fact that if I'm going to ever be able to do that, it's going to probably have to be at least like an hour away.
100%.
And, you know, but then you start talking about, like, well, if I want to look at Southern Iowa, it's like, it starts getting expensive again because that's where, yep, all the hunting properties are at.
Yep.
And so,
yep,
I don't know. I'm not going to let go of that dream, but it seems like it's getting further and further away for the average person, you know?
Yep. So, and and I've said this 100 times before. I had a conversation with a guy from Whitetail Properties and I asked him just a random question. What is the household income of your average client? And he told me that it is $500,000. Okay. So what's that? What does that tell you? That I believe the average household income for the top 1% of people in America is 480,000. I think it's 480,000 for to be considered the top 1% earners in this country.
Yeah. Okay.
So your main market is to 1%. Is to the 1%, right? Back in the day, I feel like before the boom, average Joes could afford ground. And now I'm in a position where what do I want to do? Like my dad has 76 acres in pretty much farm country that he was handed down to him by his parents. And so like that is probably going to be my only opportunity to get ground is from that piece,
yeah,
that piece of property. And it's nowhere close to where I live. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and then, you know, I have a brother, you know, I don't know what my brother's going to do with that or what he wants to do with that. You know, this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. And so that's not for me to decide. That's for him to decide. And it's just, I don't know. It's frustrating because guys like us really want it and we can't afford it.
Yeah.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Yeah, I worry about that too with like kind of where, and you would hope that some of like the legislation and the regulations for the state stay in place and protect that. But I worry about like outside people out of state too that have big money coming in, buying up land, leasing it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's dude, like, one of the farms I hunt.
Don't ruin what we have here.
Exactly. One of the farms that I hunt in Southern Iowa, not one property boundary is owned by a Iowa resident. It's all owned by either a corporation or by non-resident landowners. Okay. And so like you mentioned, as far as some of those rules and regulations, some of those rules and regulations get changed to where a landowner can get a tag every year. It's over. It is over for
everything. Iowa is gone.
Yep. It's over. Every 4-acre lot that, because right now I believe it's 4 acres, you can get a landowner's tag. A landowner tag.
Is that what it is? Four?
I thought it was four.
That's like nothing, too.
That's nothing, right? And so imagine.
And it's not like we even have a lot of like habitat in the state to like support a huge deer population. It's mostly because of the regulations and legislation
that 100%
has protected it, you know? Like, yep. It's mostly ag when you look at it.
100%. So, just look on a satellite image of Iowa.
Yeah.
And see where all of the, like, there's timber along the main rivers. There's timber fingers south of, what would you say, Interstate 80?
Yeah.
Is what, but that's even like,
a different line.
Yeah. And everything north of that is big ag. And I mean big ag, right? Yeah. And then you look south of that. Oh, I would say even south, maybe 50 miles of Interstate 80, there's some fingers and timbers and stuff in there along the Mississippi River, obviously, up to northeast Iowa. But once you get into central Iowa, I mean, come on. They're farming to the fence rows on everything, right?
Yeah, so it's crazy. Have you hunted northeast Iowa very much?
I have for turkey before, but I've never deer hunted up there. Although one of these years, I might just say, screw it and go up there for a rut, for one of my ruts.
It's a complete, for most people, they probably don't realize, but it's a completely different landscape.
100%.
Like, it's not like what you would think when you think Iowa up there. It's all bluffs and super hilly terrain.
Yep.
My brother lives in southwest Wisconsin, so I've always kind of thought about doing that and kind of trying to figure out how I could make that work, but I've always kind of wanted to hunt up there too, because I feel like it would be completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get your perspective on something. The thing as a father. So my son just shot his first deer this past
weekend,
awesome. Right? And I'm jacked about it. But it makes me think, what's the future for my children as far as hunting is concerned, right?
Yeah.
The landowners that I have right now, one guy's in his early 60s, so he'll be around for a while.
Yeah.
The other landowner, she's in her 70s. I don't know what her story is going to be like right now, but that farm, I know once it's gone, I'm gone out of it.
Yeah.
Like it will be sold for a massive amount of dollars, right? Whether that's to a non-resident or I don't know, or to it's 400 acres in prime country that I'm going to lose, right?
Yeah.
Or another family might buy it in the area. Of course, they're going to hunt it and they're going to kick me out. And then the other farm I have is 4 hours away from where I'm at. So it's not close. Do you ever worry about what the future of hunting is going to be like for your children?
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to ask you about this because I mentioned my kids are age 6 and 4. Like they're still pretty young, right? Like one is like the right age to really start like introducing them to some of that stuff. Cause I do this kind of with sports too. It's like, I want them to like the things that I like, but I also don't want to like push stuff on them and be like that crazy dad.
Yeah.
But then I've thought about that too. It's like, where are they going to be able to hunt if they do like it? I mean, because even the property the private ground that I have access to right now, I don't know what the state of that's going to be in 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of struggle with that. It's like, I've been trying to challenge myself to try to hunt more public because that might be all that I have access to here at some point.
Yep.
And I feel like if you can kill deer on public land, you're a pretty good hunter. Like,
yep.
I don't care if it's a giant deer or if it's just a 2-year-old buck or whatever it is. It's like, to me, like those are kind of different animals.
Yeah.
Kind of depends on the property you're hunting, but like when there's a bunch of hunters all going after the same deer, I feel like you got to really have your stuff dialed.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I've thought about that a lot for my kids, and it's like, I don't know what it's going to look like, and especially if laws get changed, they allow additional rifle hunting, crossbows, all that stuff. It's like, I have nothing against crossbows or rifles, but it's like, we were talking about it earlier. It's like the reason that things are good in this state is because of the laws that we have now and what it's done to protect it.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And the fact that we have way less hunters than Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's because and the rules and regulations for non-residents to come into this state are limited because we don't have the habitat that Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan has. Right. And so basically, would you be safe? Would you agree with this comment? Iowa is less of a state for deer hunting and more of a big honey hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So like it's not huge. And it's like, I feel like it's really fragile.
Yeah. I think it's a really good example of what like the right regulations and like conservation type laws will do. Like, it's a good example of what that can do to a deer population.
Right. Right.
Because yeah, we just don't have like a ton of habitat to support huge deer herds. And it's like, it wouldn't take very long or very much to break all of that.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this? Like, you hear people talk about things like, you know, big, you know, age structure and big bucks, and then at the same time, access for more hunters on the landscape and things like that. What do you think is more important? Carrying capacity of the landscape for deer so that people get an opportunity to hunt a deer versus a higher age structure where bigger bucks are on the landscape?
Ooh. It's kind of a delicate balance there.
Is there a rule and regulation where we can have both?
Maybe. I don't know. I guess I lean more towards like promoting and building access for more hunters. Mm-hmm. Cause I think that leads to more people that care about the land, more people that have a vested interest in the laws and regulations.
Yeah.
And I think naturally though, that'll just do that more, many more people that we'll want to protect what we have.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where I come in, but I see arguments to both sides. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the struggle with a lot, especially for Iowans, is there used to be this heyday where we could have our cake and eat it too, where not only did we see a ton of deer, but we saw a ton of big bucks too. Right. And now those days are over. The population is low and the quality of your average buck, I think, is lower now too. And the fact that I'm really not sure, I think Iowa's special and why I said fragile earlier is because yes, we may have a lot less hunters on our landscape, but we also have less landscape for the carrying capacity of said deer herd.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to, my dad would tell me stories about when they were younger hunting, and it just seemed like the Wild West a little bit, like the deer drives and stuff like that they would do as kids and just the amount of deer that were around then. And it's like, seems like it's a lot different now. Maybe it's your perspective, but.
Yeah. Well, and then let's take our county, for example. Right. I don't know. Are you from the area originally as a kid?
Yeah. Okay. I'm originally from Iowa City.
Okay. Yeah. So do you remember 965? And I'm just going to be really specific here on this location.
Yeah.
From Iowa City to North Liberty and then from North Liberty to Cedar Rapids on 965, there was nothing except timber and farm country galore. And now that's gone. It's strip malls and new houses and, you know, all these communities. I was looking at a picture of North Liberty.
When I was a kid, North Liberty was like a four-way stop, man.
That's it. That's the picture I was just going to tell you about. It was a flashing red light at an intersection off of Penn Avenue and 965. And that was it.
Like, I'm not that old. Like, I'm going to be 36 in a couple months. And that's in not that much time, that has all changed. And now North Liberty is a huge suburb of Iowa City. Tiffin was pretty much nothing. There was like a four-way stop and, you know, a couple of things out there. And now it's a huge growing community too. It's all blending into each other. And then everything in between. I mean, pretty soon at some point, Iowa City and Cedar Rapids are going to be connected. Like,
Yeah, it's just crazy.
It's wild.
Wild. And I know that the specific examples that we're giving here are also relatable to guys, I'm guessing, like in the Pittsburgh area or into like the Grand Rapids, Michigan, or any, it seems like any urban sprawl is getting bigger and bigger. Meanwhile, I guess there's a little bit of a saving grace is that I'm guessing that the opposite is happening in certain communities where people are leaving those communities and then they're not coming back to them, thus maybe providing more hunting opportunities for locals in that area. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't know. I feel like we've gotten so many people that have kind of moved here to escape like bigger cities in the country. But I don't know if that's like bringing a lot of like additional hunting pressure, because I don't know if a lot of those folks are hunters, but it's just mostly eating up the areas that we all used to hunt.
Yeah. From like little acreages and even like to the max development of industrial storage units and like this distribution centers and things like that. It's crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Kind of switching gears here just a little bit. Mm-hmm. What does, now that you're a bow hunter, right? I want to talk about that first year, first 3 years as a bow hunter. When you made the decision, hey, I want to pick up a bow, I want to be a bow hunter, what were those first 3 years like for you?
Well, like I said earlier, I get obsessed with stuff. Like when I decide, when I land on something, like my wife always like makes fun of me or criticizes me when I get a new idea. Cause like I will get complete tunnel vision and I'll just want to know everything there is to know about it.
Yeah.
And like, I guess those, like when I first started, like I didn't really have like a bow hunting or really even much of a hunting mentor. Cause like I hadn't really been hunting for a while. Since I was a younger kid, like I grew up doing sports and all that stuff. I was pretty busy. Went to college, left, went to the military for a little bit, came back. And then kind of found this, and the first, so it was like, okay, where can I learn what there is that, what do I need to know about bow hunting if I want to do this? Mm-hmm. So it was like, literally like start listening to podcasts, which yours was one of them. Like Wired to Hunt was one of them. There's a few others that like really kind of like, especially those episodes where like you went over like the basics, the things that you need to know, super helpful to guys like me there. And then YouTube. And then it was everything from there, like learning how to work on a bow, build your arrows and all that stuff. So like, I feel like I kind of got involved in it that way. And then when actually like out hunting, like looking back on it, like complete shit show. But I mean, I was able to shoot a doe my first season. So that was like a big accomplishment for me. And then the next year shot another doe. And then pretty much each year after that, I'm going to jinx myself right now, but I've been able to shoot a buck each year since then. So,
Nice.
So I've found some good success. Nothing crazy, but like a few nice deer mixed in there. And it's kind of like, I feel like I'm in this spot now too. Like I have this like selfishness of where like now all I want to do is go chase like really big bucks.
Yeah.
I didn't like have like that earlier phase. Like I wish I would have found bow hunting like 20 years ago. But now also I got a young family and so I'm trying to kind of balance those things, you know, and kids are getting older and all that stuff. So yeah, the first few years were a lot of fun because it was all so new, but now that I'm like trying to balance this whole, I want to just take time and just go chase like the biggest buck I can find and spend all my time in the woods to, I got a family life too that I got to balance and only so many points I can use up with my wife when she's watching the kids in the first 2 weeks of November. So,
yeah, I'll tell you this, man, I'm glad I did what I did.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
And I did it before I had kids, and I did it over the course of the last, I would just say 10 years, right? Since 2016 is when I finally started figuring out big bucks, right? And I've gone through and I've killed older age class deer. You know, I would say that the deer that I've killed would be a above the average of average deer, right? And in the state that I hunt in. And I've been very blessed with my success, and I've been very happy with the result. My whole thing is, now that I have kids who are of hunting age, I'm going to be giving them opportunities on the farms that I hunt. And so I no longer have real, I'm in a stage where I just want to give them opportunities. And if, you know, a 2-year-old buck shows up, I don't feel I should be telling them what they can and can't shoot. You know what I mean? Like I don't care if there's a giant deer on my farm every single year on my farms anymore, because all I care about is putting deer in front of them right now.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. And if a big buck shows up while I'm in a tree later on, awesome. But I'm still going to go chase the top tier of deer on those areas. And if that's some years a 140 and some years it's a 170, I don't care anymore, really. I'm just going after what's available.
Yeah. I've tried to kind of just tell myself, like, listen, it's, that'd be cool, but you like really can't focus on that stuff anymore. I was going to ask you about that. Like, how old are your kids? When did you introduce them into, or how'd you get them introduced to hunting? Like, 'cause I've been kind of wrestling with that. Like, my oldest is a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Not really sure like when the right moment is.
Yeah.
If that's the age or if it's later, don't want to burn them out, you know?
100%. I'll just tell you what works for me. I am not a blind hunter. Right. I learned how to hunt turkeys by going into the woods with a shotgun and a call, and that's it. And running around like a maniac until one was dumb enough to walk in front of me. All right. The same thing with bow hunting. I just got a tree stand on my back with a set of sticks, and I grabbed my bow and some other shit, and I went into the woods and just learned how to do it. Right. So for me, I learned by failure. And so I also feel that my kids need to learn from failure. Thus, I don't use a blind or a tree stand. Now, if I was on a managed farm and it was my farm and I lived on it and I had the opportunity to set it up, right? And maybe. But I'm trying to prepare my kids for if they do want to go out and hunt on their own someday, they're going to need a foundation that's going to allow them to do that. And that is by getting busted, by learning deer movement, by knowing, like my son, I was joking. He shot the dumbest deer in the woods this year, right? I'm not joking, dude. We were moving around. We were not in a blind. We're sitting on the ground. I had cut some maples that had fallen or down into a makeshift blind and like some branches. And then the deer came behind us and it watched us turn around and it watched us move the gun and it watched my son trying to find the scope. It watched me turn the zoom down on the scope, my son going back to it, and he shot it. Right. So he got lucky. I told him that, like, that just does not happen with a buck, like an older buck. It doesn't happen with an older doe, and things like that. And so he was grateful for that. But my son still can't sit still, and he's 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And my daughter, she's starting to understand, and she knows that sitting still is important, and she knows like all these things are very important. My son, he got lucky is what I'll say. But what I don't want to do, he wants to go hunting. And so even though I don't think he's necessarily ready, but he wants to go, I have to then change my expectation to, we're probably not going to see anything tonight, or just I want to get him out there, right? Just get him out there with the blaze orange. I think my son enjoyed shooting the gun leading up to the hunt more than he did the hunt and killing the deer, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, I have buddies who have 10-year-olds as well, and their kid is dialed. I mean, They know I'm not moving. I'm here. They take it way serious. And my son right now at 10 years old is not quite there yet. My daughter, she's 12, way more mature. She understands and she's in it. She's killed a turkey and now she wants a deer. And so I think a lot of it, dude, is just shooting from the hip.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
But six is young.
Yeah, six is really young. And I the last thing I want to do is like take him out there, have a bad experience, and then you just ruin it, you know? Yeah. Like, so it's probably,
I think that's under your control, though. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going there and you're taking him in and you expect him to sit still and be quiet,
there's no way.
Yeah, that's not a realistic expectation.
You know what I mean? Probably more so about just stacking positive experiences more than anything, you know?
100%. 100%. Yeah. And that's why I like starting off with fishing. I like starting off with shed hunting. I like starting off with turkey hunting, because turkey hunting, you can't necessarily get away with a lot of movement, but it's loud, especially if you can get a turkey to gobble. I mean, kids dig that. They dig that stuff up. And that's why I'm a huge advocate of fishing, right? It's you're out there, you're moving around a lot, but you're outside. And so maybe that's a first step.
Yeah. And that was like I said, like that was like my first like real love. Like I love bass fishing and my kids love it. So it's like, hey, whatever, as long as it gets them outside.
Yep. 100%. 100%. And that's where my mind starts to go, based off of our previous conversation about, you know, what is going to happen. At least we'll have bodies of water that are public land to go fishing on.
Yeah.
At some point. Right. And
yeah,
I don't know. True. I'm afraid for the North American hunter that it's already in the throes of a pay to play type system.
Yeah, I know.
What are you looking forward to the most about this upcoming season?
I feel like I'm already so far behind like the curve. Like I just got like my first two trail cams out like the last like week and a half. Because I finally had a window on a weekend where I could get out there. I could set a few. Thankfully, like the areas where I usually go, at least on the private land that I have access to, like I didn't have a lot to do when it came to like trimming some shooting lanes or anything like that. So like it was pretty much get out there, get set up, you know, where I usually set up. I think this year, like I'm kind of thinking about trying to set a goal for myself to like do less hunting on the private. And I really want to start focusing more on public, and I want to shoot a buck on public.
Okay.
That's like my goal.
How do you think you're going to accomplish that goal?
That's been hard, because like, I feel like, especially on public, like you got to put in the time to scout. And that's where like I run into challenges, is I don't have a lot of that free time between, you know, young kids, pretty busy job, all those things. I kind of have like a pretty short window in early November. I usually take about like 10 days or so. And I hunt pretty hard during that time. So a lot of times it's like, I'll hunt the morning, maybe I'll get down for midday, go do some scouting, get some food, get back out there kind of a thing. So like, I'm kind of doing something hunting related all day long, but I don't really do like the all day sits as much. I can't really sit still for that long, but
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I think as far as like for public, I think this year, like I'm just going to have to like just completely like, just dive in and just scout my way in and start setting up on fresh sign. And that's where I struggle too. I think I asked this in my question that I submitted to you. It was like, how do you know when to give a spot enough time, especially like on public, because you don't know what came through before you. You don't know how many hunters came through, blew the whole area out. It's like, where do you know when to pick up? How do you know when to pick up and move?
Yeah.
And then, you know,
I'm actually, that's probably a weakness of mine.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting,
lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping,
banshee flying,
space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding,
what is the whole network galaxy rewinding,
fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You know what I mean? I used to be the guy when I first started hunting where I would sit in the same stand over and over and over and over and I just burnt it out.
Yeah.
Then I went mobile, right? I got my first set of Lone Wolf sticks. I got my first Lone Wolf assault and I didn't sit in the same spot ever two times in a row. Maybe an afternoon and then a morning or a morning, then an afternoon, but never multiple days in a row. And I think that was too much, you know,
I feel like I'm in that trap right now.
Yeah.
It is. Cause I love being able to bounce around and go from spot to spot, but then I'm like, should I just stay put and give this more time?
Yeah. And I think that, I don't know, there's no magic recipe, especially on public, because anything can happen. I would say, this is what I would say. Give it a morning. Or I would set up in an afternoon, give it an afternoon, the next morning, and then the next afternoon. And if you're not seeing any type of deer movement, and I don't mean if that big buck shows up, I mean any deer movement, like a doe group or something, then maybe it might be time to go to a different ridge or something like that. But but don't base one sit on what is in that area, because it's not enough information.
Yeah. Have you found that you can kind of get away with more or less like on when you're on, if you, I'm not sure how much public you hunt, but like, can you get away with, or do you have to really have your access dialed, I guess is what I'm getting at. Like, do you really?
Well, you have to have your access. I mean, this is my opinion. I have my access, I try to anyway, have it dialed for every hunt I go on, private, public, or otherwise. It's the thing that I think about the absolute most, and it is literally the most important. Because if you're walking in when deer or where deer are, I'll just use the most basic example ever. If you're walking through a field in the morning where the deer are feeding to a stand and they all bust out and you have no idea, or you're walking through a bedding area in an afternoon hunt, or your wind is blowing into a bedding area on an afternoon hunt. Well, those are two examples of the wrong way to do that. So you got to be a little bit more creative in your access routes. That's all I think about. Like if you said you're obsessed about bow hunting, I'm obsessed about access routes. It's the only thing I think about. If I find a good location, I go, how do I get here? And if I can't get here, then it's not a good location.
That's what I struggle with, is because I find like some really good locations, places I want to be. And sometimes it's like borderline. And you're like, man, I'm probably going to blow some stuff out getting in there. Mm-hmm. But if I can get in there and get set up fairly quiet, you know, be fairly quiet, be somewhat stealthy, like I'm gonna see something. And so it's like trying to figure out like how aggressive do you want to be. And like in my case, like I got like a 10-day window, right? So it's like, to me, I'm like, and usually I'm hunting early November, so I'm like, I usually try to push it pretty hard, and then I'm kind of wondering like, did I just blow this whole area out or what? But it's probably an experience thing, you know, like I've only been hunting for 7-8 years, so it's like things I probably just have to learn.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I'm trying to think of any, like, obviously the wind direction while you're while you're doing your access route is of key importance. However, if you're far enough away from where, like, this is just a theory of mine, right? And I've talked about this 1,000 times as well. Mm-hmm. If you walk down or upwind of bedding and your scent is blowing into bedding at 10 yards, they're going to smell you and they're going to run away. But if you do it at 200 yards, they may still smell you, but they may not assess you as a threat because your scent has had time to kind of dilute with the rest of the scents, and they may smell you, they may be aware of you, but then you pass them and then that scent goes away, and then they kind of just what I'm saying is I think they can tell time and distance based off of scent potency.
Yeah.
And I think that plays a key role in access routes and how aggressive I'm willing to be in those access routes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And because I've definitely gone about, I've noticed that, like, kind of to what you were saying is, like, if you're far enough away, like, yeah, your wind might be kind of blown in eventually to where you're, but if you're trying to, like, loop around, maybe you can kind of get away with a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, depending on the distance that you have for that, like, that scent to kind of disperse. And they probably can't pinpoint you as well.
Right. And the other thing I would say is this. People have habits of walking in straight lines. And I take that, and I don't mean like straight lines. I mean, they're following the path of least resistance. That's a better term to get to a tree stand. Well, the best access route and the path of least resistance, that never adds up. You know, it's never the same thing. So if you want to take the easy route and get to a stand location, well, okay, do it. But more than likely, you need to go up a big hill or loop around through a big valley or drainage or walk an extra half a mile to loop into an area so that this virgin ground that you're planning on hunting isn't destroyed.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know that. Most people know that. I know that. But there's still times where I'm like, I've hunted 10 days in a row, or, you know, I'm exhausted, or I had to stay up late with the kids and now it's 4 a.m. and I'm
like, starting, that shortcut.
Exactly. Take the shortcut. And now it just doesn't pay off in the end. And so, over the first, from 2006 to 2016, that is where I learned that the access route is probably the number one contributor to my success.
Yeah.
So
do you ever like when you're planning your access, you know, your access is pretty good from like a scent perspective, but maybe it's super thick and nasty. Like you have to kind of get through like a really nasty thicket and you're going to make some noise getting through there. Do you ever kind of weigh like, if I just do it quick, get it over with, make some noise, get and let things calm down as quickly as possible, or I go slow, try to be methodical, and then I'm still making noise, but it's like a longer span of time.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I think that depends on the afternoon. Like if it's the afternoon and you're trying to go through a whole bunch of thick shit to get to a tree stand, that's probably not as good. But if it's in the morning and you're going through a whole bunch of thick stuff, then I think the deer are probably like, I always am trying to go, my access routes are where the deer are not at that period of time. That doesn't mean that they're not going to come through there again. But what I mean by that is I feel like I'm okay with making a ton of noise in the mornings to get to a tree stand if I know that the deer are out in a destination food source or they're out somewhere and then they're funneling back in. Yeah. In the afternoons, I am way more critical of sound than I am in the mornings going into places, because the mornings are usually transitioned back to bedding, if not bedding. I don't hunt a ton of bedding, but afternoons I'm trying to get into transition from bedding to staging. And those are my favorite, spots to hunt. But one thing I don't necessarily know is how far is bedding actually away from the tree stand location or the pinch point or the terrain feature or the staging area that I'm hunting in? And what happens if deer are already on their feet as I'm coming in and I just don't know about it? Well, that's why I'm way more critical of how loud I am on afternoon hunts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, and I'm wrong all the time still.
Yeah, I overanalyze everything.
Everything. Yep. It's too bad. It's really too bad because I think in years past, it used to hinder the actual enjoyment that I used to have. And I'm glad I have that knowledge now, but I have literally stopped giving a shit about a lot of things lately. And like just going and hunting for, you know, hunting for fun. Per se, yeah. Taking my kids with me now on some of this stuff. And yes, I still like big bucks, but I've done it, right? I've done the 10-year grind of going out there and trying to kill the biggest deers on the, you know, biggest deer on the farm and all that stuff. And now I'm just in a different mindset right now. And I think I'm still doing the same things, like really paying attention to access routes, but I'm also not overcritical.
Yeah.
About it anymore either. So I don't know, man. What's your goal this year?
Yeah. Like I said, I want to shoot a buck on public this year. Yep. That's my goal. Like if I'm going to drill down to one thing, I want to get it done on public because the last 5-6 years I've done it like on the private property that I feel like I got that property figured out, you know? And it's like, am I even like growing as a hunter if I'm just doing the same thing every year? And it's cool because like my number one priority is always like, I want to fill my freezer.
Yep.
But after that, it's like, I want to shoot a nice buck. And if I can make that on public, that'd probably be my biggest goal for this year. And so it'll probably be more frustrating because there's probably going to be times where, you know, pull up and there's 6 trucks in the lot and you don't know where folks are at and you got to have a plan B, a plan C.
Yep.
And most of my scouting will probably have to just be through aerials.
Yep.
Mapping. So.
Yep. And boots on the ground, my friend.
Yep.
Yep.
And kind of just hunt your way in.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. So. Well, dude, thank you very much. I will say this. Go Hawks. You're wearing a Hawkeye hat. Go Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous about this weekend's game, but.
Oh, we'll get crushed. And it's okay. Because as a Iowa fan, I understand how to accept failure. Let's just say that.
You're used to the pain by now.
Exactly. Right. It's I'm calloused.
Plus, it's almost wrestling season and stuff like that. We got some new stuff to look forward to. So
100%. Dude, that's what I'm really looking for. Hey, my daughter met Kennedy Blades.
What?
Yeah. They were walking through Target in Iowa City and she was there with somebody. And my wife, she walks up to her, goes, "Can I have a picture with you and my daughter, please?" And she's like, very, very nice young lady. And,
I think she just got a bronze at Worlds.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
So
that's kind of a flex getting to meet her. Or my daughter did anyway. So
that's cool.
Well, my friend, good luck this upcoming season. Hopefully all of your wildest dreams come true and that elusive 200-incher walks by your stand and you put an arrow through its heart, dude.
Yeah, they're all over the place, right?
All over the place, right? Well, I'm wishing you the best of luck anyway.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. Good luck to you too as well. I'll be listening and tracking your season. So good luck.
Perfect. Appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, man.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.